Happy Monday, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the HD View with Demi Pillard. This is Melissa Biliardi, your host tonight. Our call-in numbers are 310-982-4227 and 877-497-4103. When you call in, press 1, and we will cue you into the show. Please tell all your colleagues, friends, and family about Help for HD Radio, and please click follow on our show page to get email reminders of upcoming episodes. Thank you, 48,800 listeners, for tuning in. Tonight, our dear friend Jimmy Pollard is back on the show with us. We'll get to catch up on what he's been working on last year. He's been very busy with speaking engagements for CHDI and his latest project going through the Woody Guthrie Archives, sleuthing the history, culture, lore, and folklore of Huntington's disease. We'll get to hear some of Woody's writings and letters, interesting insights into his life, and poignant stuff. Stay tuned, and we'll welcome to the HD View. We'll be talking to Jimmy in just a moment.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. I went a walk in that ribbon of highway. I saw above me that endless skyway. Saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. I roamed and rambled and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts. All around me a voice was sounding, this land was made for you and me. When the sun comes shining, then I was strolling and the wheat fields waving and the dust clouds rolling. Voice was chanting and the fog was lifting. This land was made for you and me. This land is your land and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. Sun comes shining, then I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving, the dust clouds rolling, the voice coming chanting, and the fog was lifting. This land was made for you and me.
Great song. This program tonight is with Jimmy Pollard. We're going to kind of do a little ode to Woody Guthrie tonight. And welcome back to the show, Jimmy. How are you, and how have you been for last year?
good. And
you've
it's
been having...
the centennial of, well, actually, I think we're off by 2 months, but it was the centennial of Woody's birth, and there were all kinds of events around the country to celebrate it. Let me just make 2 points about your introduction. First of all, I don't speak for CHDI. I'm certainly not authorized to do that, nor do I understand the wonderful science to the degree that a layman probably should these days even. But they support my, I'm really excited. What I've been doing to also answer is, let me just tell you the story. I've been unemployed for about a year after 26 years of working with families with Huntington's disease. I suddenly, in the economic downturn, with the state of Massachusetts, found myself without a job. Excuse me. And then I bumped into the folks from CHDI who said, what would you like to do? And I said, I'd like to continue what I'm doing, which is going around talking about HD, working with families, especially their interface with nursing homes, promoting people who are in research studies, trying to highlight cognitive features. And they said, we'll support your work. So it was a gift for all those of you out there, and there's bazillions of you who are unemployed. There's hope. And the other point I just want to clarify is I'm not very busy yet, but
okay.
I want to be very busy yet. And with CHDI supporting my work, I look ahead to being very busy. So if anybody out needs a speaker at their support group or at family meetings or at conference presentations or working with a local nursing home in program development or whatever, I've done a number of different things. I'm a call away. So we'd like you to make – we, meaning I, would love you to make me very busy.
How about California, Jimmy?
Yeah, well, the catchment area is the United States, so yes.
Okay, well, how do we do that? Do we call
people can contact me. My email is jjpollard@comcast.net, and my phone number is 978-758-9610.
Awesome. Okay. Well, we got to keep you busy because you've done some awesome things.
Well, the Woody thing is one of them that is
yeah,
with a labor
about
of love.
The archive. I'm so interested in that.
It's somewhat embarrassing to tell you this, but excuse me, about 10 years ago, I had heard from a rock and roll writer in Chicago, a guy named Thomas Connors. I don't still know if he's there, but I met him at the Woody Guthrie Festival in Okemah, Oklahoma, Woody's hometown, several years ago. And Thomas, from his newspaper, had taken a sabbatical and spent it at the Woody Guthrie Archives in New York City. And when he met me and knew of my interest in all things related to Huntington's disease, he said, you should go to the archives. Woody wrote a lot of stuff that I came across in my year. Actually, Thomas actually wrote a paper about Woody Abbott Huntington's deaths accessible through the Woody Archives website, which is woodyguthrie.org. So I began to go down about one day a month over the course of about 3 years, and the archivist there would find stuff and let me read it. And it was really both poignant to read how touching some of the stuff he wrote, how some of it was humorous, but how it really tracked the full progression of his living with Huntington's disease until he just couldn't write anymore, pretty much. You know, a lot of people who are faced with any progressive disease often say, well, I'm going to document my progress, you know, for others, or just as a self project for themselves. There's a couple of great websites, by the way, for ALS where people have done that. But for all the people who, you know, vow to do that, just because life gets in the way, as we all know, they don't actually achieve it. I don't think Woody said, I'm going to document my Huntington's disease course, because he was a prolific writer. He would write in notebooks. If you go to the Woody Archives, there are brown paper bags with lyrics on them or notes. Pieces of wallpaper. That's all literally true. And many, many of those old black notebooks with the kind of black and white spongy stuff that says composition book on it.
Right.
Or yellow legal pads where every line on both sides of the paper are in any surface you could write on that you could carry is probably in the archives with something Woody wrote on it. So
Are they dated? Are they dated? Are the items dated so you know?
Some are dated and some aren't. And the archivists have done a really great job over the last decade trying to date all the stuff.
You said Mary Jo saved everything, his sister?
Yeah. It was very common for Woody to date his own stuff, by the way. So, but there was some stuff that's it's difficult to track down the context.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the archives consist of all kinds of stuff. And it seems as though both Marjorie Guthrie, his widow, and his sister Mary Jo Edgman, Marjorie passed away some years ago, but Mary Jo is still alive and well. I think she's living in Seminole, Oklahoma. She's in her 90s now. And both Marjorie and Mary Jo would save anything that Woody wrote or would send to her.
Wow.
So that's the source of the archives, and then all the manuscripts and everything else that he had himself. But among the stuff are humorous things and things about HD, and just to start with a light note, in the margin of one of the papers, here's a humorous thing. Woody wrote this. It's about books. Books is all right, as far as books go, but as far as they go, they still don't go far enough. A book is just like a woman's dress, short enough to be interesting and long enough to cover the subject.
That's great.
What
a sense of humor, too, huh?
I guess the thing that most people know Woody by, obviously, is This Land Is Your Land, and a whole bunch of other songs that seem to be made more popular by more current bands now. But he's also known pretty widely for his autobiographical novel, Bound for Glory. And woven through Bound for Glory, which I recommend to anybody who's touched by Honeybees just for its general interest, it's especially really easy to listen to as an audio book, I might add.
What is it called again?
It's called Bound for Glory.
Okay, so it is in audio form as well.
It's an audio book too. I forget who reads it. And an old one, Arlo read it. Excuse me.
Is it available for a podcast download, or is it tape? Or
you're more tech-savvy than me to know the answer to that. I don't know.
Maybe Amazon?
Yeah. And so woven through it are his experiences as a young boy when his mama had HD. And Woody was, as they would say, refer to him, in some countries, a young carer, taking care of her. And taken directly from Bound for Glory, he wrote, "I used to go to sleep at night and have dreams. It seemed like I dreamed the whole thing out. I dreamed that my mama was just like anybody else's. I saw her talking, smiling, and working just like other kids' mamas. But when I woke up, it would still be all wrong, all twisted out of shape. Helter-skelter, let go, the house not kept. The cooking skipped, the dishes not washed. Old Roy," that's his brother, older brother, "and me tried, I guess. We would take spells of working the house over. But I was only about 9 years old, Roy about 15. Other things that kids do of that age, games they play, places they go swimming holes, playing, running, laughing, we drifted into those things just to try to forget for a minute that a cyclone had hit our home, and how it was ripping and tearing our family and scattering it into the winds. I hate 100 times more to describe my own mother in any words such as these. You hate to read about a mother described in any words such as these. I know. I understand you. I hope you can understand me, for it must be broke down and said." So it just gives you that kind of flavor of what it was like to grow up and see HD and his family through a child.
And how many other families are experiencing that same exact thing right now?
Yeah.
Wow.
So obviously his mother had some difficulty with controlling her temper. And he went on in another piece on the same thing as a young boy to recall, "I saw how Audit made her act and do around our house. And I've seen lots more every day than my dad. He'd get up all bright and real early every morning, and he'd go saddle up his horse and he'd ride off to his office down in town. Then she'd throw all of our furniture and all of our fixings, our chairs, our tables, our beds, our bookcases, our dresses all around, all over the whole house while she had one of our spells. And after her fit had worn off and gone on and left her, us kids would all go and pitch in, and we'd help her straighten up the whole place and get it all fixed up nice and pretty again by the time we heard Papa's foothills scrape on our front porch for our supper time."
Wow.
So you can kind of get the...
That was before mood stabilizing medications, right?
Pardon me?
That was before mood stabilizing medications, that's for sure.
Absolutely. And Yeah, a lot of those meds were invented when Woody was in the hospital. He didn't have any of them either. He had Sorazine, I think, was all that was available, if I recall. So and those kind of things are not, are easily recognizable to most families touched by HD, especially if they have more than one affected member.
Did a lot of his songs reflect these types of anecdotes throughout his writing?
Did a lot of what?
His songs, his music.
I don't think so. I don't think they did. He actually wrote one song about Huntington's disease called My Chorea. And if you give me 1 second, I'll read you a couple of verses. Woody was, it's hard to articulate. In many ways, he had all the same challenges that everybody else does as they walk the road. But he had an attitude about it that was just kind of like looking at it in the big picture. So a lot of times he would be making fun of it. So this song, My Chorea, which he wrote while he was in the hospital at Greystone State Hospital, which is no longer but was in New Jersey. He wrote the song called My Chorea. And it's kind of fun. And I'll read this 7 or 8 verses. I won't read them all to you. But 3 or 4 and you'll get the point.
Mm-hmm.
So it's called My Chorea. And again, he left the lyrics behind like so many of his songs. He left a couple of thousand sets of lyrics in his time, which the archives have.
Wow.
And obviously they weren't recorded, so they have no music. Although Nora Guthrie, who runs the archives, has been asking all kinds of musicians of all stripes to take some of them and add music. But anyway, here's a couple of choruses from My Chorea. God make cancers and boils and bad polio. God makes clap and chancres and syphilis too. God makes all kinds of sickness and miseries, and My Chorea suits me just fine. Well, it's every hospital ward I snag around. I see God rising them up and whacking them down. God makes all kinds of sickness and misery, but My Chorea fits me fine. God makes asthma and hay fevers and my allergies all. God makes 6 week fevers and my coffee cold. God makes every dejanged kind of misery, and My Chorea suits me just fine. I could try to chase Chorea off with good whiskey and wine, but your goddamned price of liquor is a mile too high. God makes all kinds of six bells and misery. My Chorea suits me just fine. And finally, my banker's got blind staggers. My rich girl's got bad eyes. My playboy, he's bald-headed. My landlady's got these hives. God makes all kinds of bad, bad misery. And My Chorea suits me just fine. My Chorea is not no mental thing. I could have it every day. Enough to get my pension check and wash my sins away. God makes every known kind of sticky misery. My Chorea fits me fine. If you get on up to heaven before I do, tell Christ and all my angels I'm drinking my way through. My God makes every kind of living misery, and My Chorea suits me just fine.
So, is that recorded?
No.
Oh, wow.
No, it's there for somebody.
Oh, my goodness.
To do, as many have been doing over the last, I don't know, 10 years.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Are there recording artists out there trying to do his stuff?
Yeah, there's a lot of them that are already out there. There's so many, I've lost track of them.
Really?
If people are, one that's really popular, at least here in Boston, was the one that was in the movie The Departed. It's by Dropkick Murphys, which is Boston, New England's own punk band. But it's called Shipping Up to Boston. And it'll be familiar to a lot of people when you hear it. And it's just a snippet of lyrics that were written in the corner of a page. that the Dropkicks took and did it. Several Americana artists, folk artists, have added words. Billy Bragg, who's an English guy, well-known singer over there, did a whole album called Mermaid Avenue. Other American artists like Joel Raphael, who's from San Diego, has two or three albums of Woody songs that he put music to. All kinds of folks. I'm embarrassed.
Wow.
I'm pulling blanks, but
a very rich archive of writings
and Springsteen and you know John Mellencamp and all those kind of folks have done Woody tunes.
Now, are you still doing the events for the Guthries?
We still do
Breakfast at Lou's and.
Yeah, we do. Yep, what you're referring to is the Woody Guthrie Folk Festival, which is around Woody's birthday in July 14th, is a festival in his hometown of Okemo, Oklahoma, which is about halfway between roughly Tulsa and Oklahoma City, right on I-40. And it is the gathering of the, as one person calls it, the Tribe of Woody. And it's a big festival, and they get several thousand people there every summer.
Mm.
And we all celebrate Woody's life, including with Saturday morning breakfast, or a pancake breakfast, with Woody's sister Mary Jo Edgman, who we had mentioned earlier, at Lou's Rocky Road Tavern, outside on the hot Oklahoma mornings in July.
What about the garbage trail walk?
And the garbage trail walk is done at the Guthrie Center in Western Massachusetts. So, again, you can't presume young folks know who Arlo is, who Woody is.
Mm-hmm.
You certainly can't that they know who Arlo Guthrie is. But Arlo Guthrie is a folk singer, or folk slinger, as he likes to call himself now and then, who's still very active. His website's arlo.net, touring the country nonstop, still. And for those of you too young to know, Arlo had a underground radio hit. Underground radio referring to FM radio, when AM radio was the dominant media, unlike it is today.
Oh,
and it was whatever, 16 minutes long, so it had to be played on FM radio. It tells the story of Arlo's experience with the Vietnam draft.
Oh, wow.
And how his arrest in Western Massachusetts for littering got him out of the draft. So Arlo bought the church that he consecrated church in Western Massachusetts in Great Barrington, right near Stockbridge, that tells the story and has turned it into kind of a community center. And
that's
we have a pledge walk there called the Garbage Trail Walk, because the garbage trail refers to the key sites in the story, which would take too long for me to tell you. And the key thing about the garbage is that he got arrested because he tried to dump garbage in the dump, which was closed on Thanksgiving Day, and he got arrested. So it's the Garbage Trail Walk.
Oh, my goodness. Trying to be clean, and he gets arrested.
Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting stuff. What about the Family Scientist Thanksgiving dinner? Are you still doing that, too?
And almost every year, we have a, because Thanksgiving is central to the Alice's Restaurant story, which is the name of Woody's kid. I should have just explained it all from the beginning. In that church, it was centered around this big Thanksgiving dinner they were going to have in 1965, and the sacristy of the church was loaded with garbage, so he had his VW bus and was going to take that garbage I mentioned to the dump.
Wow.
So every Thanksgiving, we, not on Thanksgiving Day, obviously, but around Thanksgiving, maybe the week before, we have a big dinner where we bring together families touched by Huntington's disease, and the scientists working on their behalf, mainly from the Boston, Albany, New York, New York City area. Marcy McDonald from Mass General is the key player who usually gets those folks, and they are, as Marcy would call them, bench people,
mm-hmm.
who are in labs and actually don't ever interface with people who live with Huntington's disease. So we get those folks and put them at nice big banquet tables with families touched by Huntington's disease, and it allows us to allows everybody to, as Marcy would say, it allows my lab folks to put a name or a face on their work. And it, I like to say, and it allows families to ask the when question, when the hell are you going to cure this thing?
Right.
And it's, we have a program after that, and it's always a high point of a lot of people's calendars. This year, the theme was, every year we put a little different twist on the theme. This year's theme back in November was celebrating research volunteers.
Okay. Yeah, I think you put that on your outline.
Yes.
Yeah.
And recruiting volunteers is, in my humble opinion, if not the most, among the top two or three things facing the community.
Right.
Because participation rates across all diseases, all conditions, is, you know, 2 or 3%. The HD community, I guess, is matching that. But for all the money we raise and all the push that we all do with walks and mm-hmm. all the other fundraisers that are people do, jump from planes and, you know,
mm-hmm.
race snowmobiles and
mm-hmm.
stuff, you know, the Whitney, sell amaryllises. The irony is we need people to be in the studies that people are trying to raise the money for, you know? So participation is an equal measure as raising money. And it's a sad irony to have all these people in so many ways contributing to this whole big family, whether you're doing a blog radio show or you're talking about cognitive aspects like me or whatever, everybody pitches in and does what they do. The irony is that for all that effort, we're still faced by not having enough people to get most or all studies to start on time.
So what's the trick? What do you think is the answer?
Well, I don't know. And to be honest, you know, you have to respect that people, as I know you do, and anybody listening to this does, people, you know, face and walk the HD road, whether before, after symptoms, at risk, the whole thing, in their own way. But we still need people to consider it and hopefully say, yes, I'm in. And one way to do that is to try to get within the community, all of us, to value those who are already doing it. And some people who've been doing it for more than 10 years and have been through multiple studies.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to single out any one group because everybody faces their own challenges. And we're not saying any one is more important or faces more loss or suffering than the next. That said, though, if science is going to ever continue to advance, we're going to need more people. So the least we can do is honor and celebrate the contributions that people are making right now and have in the past.
I agree.
So that we say, these guys within a whole community of heroes in so many different ways, these guys hold a unique thing, because down the road, when the story is written and the cure is there or the effective treatment that prevents it or slows it down, whatever form it takes, when the story is written, they play a real concrete role. They are the foundation of science.
Right.
So at the dinner, we had 23 people who were there and had participated or were participating in currently different studies. So it was wonderful moments.
That's great.
Anyway.
Well, and the scientists, too, have to be applauded because without them, of
absolutely,
course,
man.
There would
yes.
be no science.
It's a, without it, it's again, you know, it's...
yeah.
You can't pull one out from the other. It's a
mm-hmm.
tight marriage. Yeah.
It's a symbiotic relationship, you know.
Yeah.
We need each other.
Yeah.
We have a comment in the chat room. Oh, Deb Madden says, Woody was a genius. He did not have the support and technology we have today, but he managed to plow through this with a spirit like no other. His legend stands tall today, a true tribute to his being. Good comment.
Whoever that's from is a fellow Woody file who I salute. And Woody's one of those characters.
Yeah.
The more you learn about his life, he really was a unique, unique guy and a prolific writer and had an attitude. And it's not like he didn't have problems if you read his biography and get in trouble now and then. But as whoever that was said, it stands
mm-hmm.
tall.
Yeah.
And he did, as everybody does, it seems, in their own way, faces a challenge with their own brand of grace. And Woody did that, even over the rust, some of the rust spots.
Yeah. And he did it with some humor, too, which is really a good thing
absolutely.
To have.
Yeah.
Yeah. And thank God for Marjorie for starting this movement, you know. Marjorie and many others who started the movement. Well, you're
yes.
also working on pulling together the lore of HD. Can you explain that? What are you doing?
We say the lore. I'm afraid of my Massachusetts thing. It's L-O-R-E, the lore.
Mm-hmm.
And
as in folklore?
Been, yeah, like as in folklore.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay.
I have amassed, so I've been in this like, I don't know, 26 years. And I've amassed all kinds of stuff. I've inherited from people who were getting rid of it. I've just come across it by meeting people. And like I was saying, how, you know, everybody does their little piece in the
right.
extended family. I've got, you know, all kinds of books that people have written and stuff. And so I have pulling all that together. Particularly, and just let me reference before I say this, people's tattoos, right? There are so many people that you see online now
right.
that have tattoos, on Facebook particularly,
uh-huh.
That are either Cure HD, kind of the cause, or memorials to
mm-hmm.
their family members who are affected. And some of them are beautiful, some of them are clever, some of them are kick-ass. they cover the gamut of messages and emotions.
Right.
And so I've started, and I have photographs from years ago that I've been trying to pull together and scan and do all that stuff. Now people just post them online. It's not a big deal. But back in the old days, it wasn't as easy, so I'm trying to bring all those together.
Mm-hmm.
And
are you going to do a website or
either that, or I'll do a Facebook page, or maybe somebody
mm-hmm.
already has one, and I'd be glad to just send them along.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm sure you've seen them because I know you're a Facebooker.
Yeah,
there's loads of folks who've done
oh,
that.
Yeah.
And then I know we've got, I think he's up in Wisconsin, Jake Reynolds, who's a tattoo artist. Who posts a lot. And so that's one part of the lore. But the other stuff is to bring together, because I have lost track of it, the fictional, in books, TV, shows, and movies, the fictional portrayals of people with Huntington's disease.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got loads and loads of books. And
wow.
It's grown out of where I couldn't continue to do it anymore because there were so many of them. I just couldn't keep track of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the early ones, I'm trying to bring together in a one-page sheet and put the covers and maybe some of the blurbs and the ISBN numbers so people can track them down if they're interested.
Kind of a repository of HDMI.
Yeah,
related.
It's something that can be shared easily.
Uh-huh.
I mean, like, a lot of people are unaware of, but always find fascinating, that there are two Harlequin romances where the main characters, Honeyseeds, are central to the plot.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and anybody can... one of the wonderful things about Amazon is you can get almost any book these days.
Mm-hmm.
If you just Google it, I mean, if you search Amazon's website for it, it'll pop up in the free standard, you know, used book charge, $3.99,
mm-hmm.
and then it might be a dollar for the used book.
Yeah.
But there's two Harlequin romances that are usually easy to find, and one is called Make Me a Miracle, and the author's name is Ruth Glick.
Hmm.
And it's great. It's a young woman who's grieving the loss of her husband in an automobile accident, and she's out having a moment alone in, like, a state park, and she falls and gets her ankle caught between a log and a rock. And as darkness descends and the evening comes, she's wondering how she's going to make it through. She's going to be left out in the woods all night, and she is discovered by this big, handsome Harlequin romance, Fabio kind of guy.
Yeah.
And jeans and work boots and a flannel shirt. And he rescues her, and then they meet again, and a relationship develops, but he won't commit as in love as they are. And then she learns that he's at risk of HD, et cetera, et cetera. And it all ends happily ever after. And there's another one called Amarillo by Morning, by a woman named Bethany Clark.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Bethany Campbell, if anybody's interested. But there are all kinds of other books and then movies and TV shows. And there's so many TV shows now that everybody, I'm sure, is aware of, like House and ER a couple of years before that, and Private Practice. That's what I mean. It just got too hard to keep track of them all with multiple appearances in the successive episodes.
And you say there are movies? Like movies?
There's the movie, excuse me, if you're of a certain vintage, like me, you will remember a book and a movie called Valley of the Dolls.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Right, and if you remember that, you remember how scandalous that book was.
Right.
Well,
and the show was, too.
The show.
Uh-huh.
Nowadays, it was probably less scandalous.
Right.
It would be less scandalous because there's stuff on whatever remaining soap operas there are these days that makes that stuff look tame. But at the time, it was pretty heavy stuff. But anyway, not in the book, but in the movie, which starred Sharon Tate, who was the woman in the Manson murders, victim in the Manson murders, has a husband named Tony, and he gets Huntington's disease.
Didn't know that.
And, so it's in the movie, not the book.
Right.
And it's somewhat humorous to see because Tony is at a movie premiere. And they're all dressed up out for the night, and he stumbles down a small staircase.
Oh, no.
And just says, I don't know what's happened, you know. And,
oh, dear.
And that's it. The next scene is Tony in bed and Sharon Tate walking the doctor. This goes back to when doctors made house calls. And she walks him out the door, and the doctor says, I gave him a sedative that'll wear off in the morning. It's called Huntington's Chorea, you know, and then he describes it. And it's not only humorous that he had a sudden total onset of Huntington's disease. A guy whose wife had Huntington's disease once saw the movie and jokingly called it an HD attack, like a heart attack, where all of a sudden this guy goes from being fine to tripping to being in bed the next day permanently.
Oh,
So there are all kinds of things, and other families have said, who see Valley of the Dolls, there's nothing to laugh about with Huntington's disease, except maybe that Valley of the Dolls portrayal.
Right. It's probably comical.
Because it is so silly.
Yeah. Yeah. They probably didn't get it right.
No.
Yeah.
But it is amusing.
And then there's plays as well.
There was a play called Can I Have This Dance? That was originally produced in Los Angeles, I believe, and then made a short off-Broadway run. Because I know HDSA at the time had a fundraiser or a group that went to the play.
Hmm.
And that, I haven't seen that script. No, it's probably about 10 years ago, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, we have that script, and that's about two sisters and whether they want to, whether they're going to test or not, or whether they reveal it in their relationships with their boyfriend, spouse, lover kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
like, yeah, semi-autobiography.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I have all that stuff, and to answer your question, that's, I've been doing a lot of going through stacks.
Wow. So
sure,
are you the eight, are you like a hoarder? Do you have?
I'm a collector.
Yeah.
I'm a collector.
Stacks and stacks, and no room in your house left.
Right. Right.
Wow. That's interesting stuff.
Let me read you some more Woody, unless you want to keep going.
You have more Woody? Let's do more Woody. What do you have?
Let me just take one aspect of of HD for him and Korea. And let me read you some of the things that he, how he described his Korea.
Okay.
And its progress. In 1956, Woody wrote this while he's in the hospital. My Huntington's twitchy chorea is surely a lot more twitchy than ever before. I do twitch all over, and I do jerk, and all of my oldie bodily joints in my elbows, in my fingers, in my knee joints, in my calves, all of my legs, in all of my toes, and all of my elbows, and all of my belly, and all of my plexi solar-y muscles, and all of my hips, and all of my thighs, and all of my muscle-ities of my holy body. But I'm still thanking my Jesus for telling me about God eternal.
Wow.
Two months later, he writes, I feel my jerk in Korea a little bit more. And so I'm still every day feeling about as jerky one way or another as ever. I do really have this stuff here now about 18 hours out of every old 24. And with all my Korea hitting me, and I guess I'm just really a funny sight to see.
Wow.
Then, as he gets used to type some of his things on a typewriter that his family had brought him, then he writes, and again, all related to Korea, I don't really guess that my Korea is going to be letting me type her up no more dog and bird books, no ways. I'm just a jerk in here a little too bad, and I know to type her up no more good readable goody books anyhow is going to happen anyways. Unless God does really work about his very biggest kind of healing miracle down here on me in my next 10 seconds or so, which I know he just won't. How's God treating all of you by now? Lots better than me, I'm hoping. And another time, several months later, there are a lot of kinds of Korea, and nobody is plumb sure about what kind I'll most likely have, if any. They say it ain't deadly nor fatal, so my days in yonder hospital weren't quite wasted. And then 2 months after that, I feel my jerk in Korea a little bit more, and I feel my alcoholism a little bit less, and so I'm still every day feeling about as jerky one way or another. And with all my Korea hit me and all, I guess I just really look like a funny, funny sight to see. So he described it all through that. And then several months later, my face seems to twist out of shape. I can't control it. My arms dangle all around. I can't control them. My wrists feel weak and my hands wave around in odd ways I can't stop. Seem to shake and shiver and break out in a hot and cold sweat. Awful afraid of people here seeing me break down. I try to stall it off and act different. What if I do break and go down? They can't help me here. Then 2 months after that, no bodily pains, just like my arms and legs and hands and feet and my whole body belongs to somebody else and not to me. So ashamed of myself, I want to run, hide away where nobody can find me, nor nobody see how bad I feel. Can they tell by looking at me how useless and weak and flimsy and artificial I feel? So.
Did he dictate some of this stuff to his wife? Or no?
No, this is all, everything I just read you've actually seen in his handwriting in the archives.
Wow.
And almost all of it, in fact, all the ones I can remember here right now, were written on yellow legal pads with pencil.
Wow.
And you can see over time his handwriting deteriorate.
Of course. Do you see the actual progression going on?
Over years, yes. If you took one sample from like 1950 through 56, you can see it.
Can this be used in the scientific realm or the medical realm to illustrate what actually
happened? Hopefully that's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
That was the intent that I started way back, as I said, years and years ago. So my goal is now to bring this together, and I'm getting there, and then bring it back to the archives. And I know Nora was committed, Nora Guthrie was committed to using it, and if they sold it to raise money for, I know it was HDSA, that kind of thing. And even there's some stuff that would be good as a kind of PowerPoint thing for people who wanted to just do, the fundamental, what word am I going for here? HD 101 stuff
that
you do for people.
How rapidly was his progression? Could you tell?
It's like anybody else. As you look back, how symptoms always predate getting a formal diagnosis. So people ask families, well, when were you convinced? You know, forget about the formal diagnosis. When did you first see it? And you have your intuitions, but you're not really certain. You know, you can always go back into that gray area where you wondered if something was off. You know what I mean? Or if you have HD, when you're symptom searching, it may not be that. Woody had a lot of that in his life. So it's really hard to tell where it began. But he had symptoms, I guess, clearly for about 15 years.
Did he have some of the same psychiatric issues as his mother?
Well, he had some temper outbursts. In fact, I will try to find one that I had mentioned to you that was the other day when we were chatting. Here it is. About the remorse he had after he would have a temper outburst.
Yes.
So Woody was down living in the Everglades in Beloofahatchee, Florida at the time. Staying on the property of a friend named Stetson Kennedy, and they lived kind of in an old abandoned school bus body out in the Everglades. Him and a woman that would later become, I think, his third wife, Aniki Von Kirk, I believe her name is. But anyway, one morning, Woody had a tantrum over something. I don't know what it was. I don't know if he wrote what it was, but he clearly, went over the edge, and he threw a three-legged stool at Aniki. And she obviously left in the morning without speaking to him in a huff, protecting herself, obviously. and she came home to find a typewritten note that he had done, and it is that it too is typewritten. And what he wrote to her, because she hadn't come home timely. I guess you're sort of paying me back for later on when I had my wrestling match with our good three-legged stool, which I threw outside, possibly using several grunts and cuss words along to help me hasten the job. I'm sorry if any of these little scenes and incidents I pulled, not just today and just yesterday, but for all these very trying days that we've been down here. I wish I could find some well-tried system or some good workable scheme or method to just tell you that I'm sorry for all the damnable headaches, heartaches, cuts, burns, stings, and bruises, which I've already brought to you in bunches too big and too painful for anybody anywhere to bear up under and to endure them, as you've done for such a good job of all the way along since we first commenced to lay eyes on one another.
Hmm.
He goes on to apologize. I hate this short temper of mine several times worse than you hate the damn thing. I never did deceive or fool myself that I'd ever find any close companion that had either the foolishness or the wisdom about them to understand it and to overlook it, that is, accepting my own poor damn self. And me only because I've got this job sort of forced into my hands. It could be one of a several thousand other weak points in my nature. It could be sprigs and sprouts of real or imaginary sicknesses. It could be many, many more things, but I am not at all certain that any of them will ever get one drop better. They most likely will get terribly and terribly and more terribly worse. So don't say that I didn't tell you. Don't say that I didn't warn you, at least. And that's it.
Oh,
so,
man.
Yeah, he clearly had those kind of outbursts.
We had another comment. We had another comment in the chat room. Mary Robertson says, hearing that is like hearing your loved one who cannot talk about how they feel.
It's interesting.
So it's really an insight into the mind of HD, which is very similar in so many other people, but they may not necessarily be able to articulate it.
Right.
Right.
Right. Reading this stuff, it made me realize how, even though, my family isn't directly affected, so I don't have the relationship of being a parent or a spouse or a child of somebody with HD themselves, but I've known a lot of people for a long time, and when you read Woody's stuff, you come to realize, I think, that sometimes we just don't see it from their perspective. And there's so much going on in families' lives and homes, and it's hard to do that, you know? And I think it's true in any human relationship, HD or no HD, is to really be able to see how people perceive you, you know? So, yeah, I think that comment is right on the money.
You know, another thing, too, that we don't really think about because we're so engulfed in the HD world is that, we were talking earlier about the fact that, you know, HD is not just a movement disorder. This disease is a first and foremost a psychiatric or neuropsychiatric disorder, which crosses so many different lines. We have, you know, dementias. We have other neurologic disorders, diseases, that also incorporate the psychiatric component. There's all different forms of mental illness that can also, you know, kind of relate to this as well. It's almost like having a multiple personality or a split personality where in one respect you can't control a certain behavior or action. On the other hand, it's done, it's happened, and you're remorseful. So, you know, this is really an interesting way to look at what happens in any kind of a psychiatric disorder, right?
Yeah. I can't say any better than you did. After that little lengthy apology that he wrote, there's another little four-line verse, and it says, forgive, this is, you know, kind of after the apology. Forgive. That's our secret number one. Forget what our spat was about. That's our secret number two.
I love it.
But you're right. It's not just a movement. And he also had a lot of things that one would look back at and see as kind of mood-related, depressive kind of things. And he had a really brief one. Here's my old funny feeling over me again, that lost feeling, out of control, jumpy, jerky, the least little thing knocks my ego down below the zero mark. Everything cuts into me and hurts me several times more than it should. No bodily pains, just like my arms and legs and hands and feet and my whole body belong to somebody else, not me.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we have another comment in the chat room. Deb Madden, again, she says, a lot of soul searching here tonight. Thank you, Melissa. Thank you, James. And thank you, Jimmy Pollard, for bringing us back to the core of why we do what we do.
Well, thank you. And I'm just, when you said what you said, I'm flipping through papers here trying to find relevant things.
Mm-hmm.
So that depression thing was one. Here's another one about restlessness that he wrote in 19, well, he's in the hospital on the day that, I don't trust anybody I see. It's worse when I feel hungry, and I feel hungry every minute. Even after eating a big double helping and getting up from the table, I feel disoriented. That's the book name for what I am. Useless, to a point where my pain is all but unbearable. Not needed, not wanted, no good to myself, no good to anybody else. A derelict of a failure. A wreck not worth the salvaging. Yet in some odd way, since my hernia operation over at Bellevue, I feel better in my head and all over in general than I've been feeling for many a dizzy-headed year.
Wow.
Does he
write or have anything in there about obsessive-compulsive behaviors or anything like that?
None come to mind, but I bet you there are. And if you read there are two big biographies of Woody. One is by Joe Klein, who was a well-known writer. It's called Woody Guthrie, A Life. And that goes back some years. And there's a more recent one by a guy named Ed Cray, and it's called Ramblin' Man. Both are comprehensive biographies. I recommend both of them, or either of them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you read them, particularly in Joe Klein, because he details a lot more of this kind of stuff, I think, you will find things, I think, as you go through it,
mm-hmm.
that you would say are obsessive, compulsive in nature.
Give us some book titles again, Jimmy.
But let me just finish.
Oh, okay.
So you would see it as you read his biography, but I can't think of anything he actually wrote that would indicate that.
Mm-hmm.
Other than he wrote, you know, every day.
Which is an obsession.
Yeah.
Right. Obsession, but somewhat.
The earliest book is by Joe Klein, K-L-E-I-N, and it's called Woody Guthrie, A Life.
Okay.
The nice thing about that book, by the way, is it's got a great index. So if you just look up Huntington's disease or a number of other things you might be interested in, it'll bring you right to the page, and you can start from there. I've read the thing cover to cover several times now, but I started out by looking up HD in the index and boom, flipping around that way.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed Cray is the other guy, C-R-A-Y, and it's called Ramblin' Man, and that one is more recent, but that's a really great read, too.
Ramblin' Man. Okay, cool. First name Cray or last name Cray?
Last name Cray, Ed Cray.
Ed? Okay, cool. Great stuff, Jimmy. Oh, my goodness. You've been busy. Now, are the archives in New York still, or are there any in Oklahoma?
The archives were just sold to the Kaiser Foundation in Tulsa, and they had been maintained by Nora Guthrie and her daughter, Anna Canone, and their staff, Tiffany, last name escapes me, and the current and the longtime primary archivist Jorge Arevalo. They sold the archives, and in the next year or two, as I understand it, will be transitioned over to Tulsa to the foundation that will have a facility that is both museum and research center.
Under the Kaiser archives, Foundation.
I believe so. I hope so. Hope I'm right on that.
Interesting.
And the archives actually started out in Woody's old manager's office, Harold Leventhal, who passed away a few years back. Harold brought many artists to the United States for the first time. The Clancy brothers, Miriam Makeba, managed Dylan, I think, at one time. I might be wrong on that, but definitely Judy Collins. Pete Seeger, certainly, Woody, certainly. And they were a whole bunch of file draws that Nora just began to archive in an academic sense.
What a mountain of gold, huh?
Yeah, it really is. A lot of musicians have benefited from it. And he really was a real interesting character. The more you learn about him, the more depth he had, and he was born at a really interesting time for the Depression and early civil rights movement. Blacklisting communism, McCarthy era, what?
Was he in the Dust Bowl era?
Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, he's got a whole bunch of songs called the Dust Bowl Ballads that are published by the Library of Congress, Folkways Records, I think it is.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, you know, another song that a lot of people, that Woody did was So Long, It's Been Good to Know You, which is kind of the sing-songy thing. I can't sing or I would try right now. But So Long, It's Been Good to Know You, So Long, It's Been Good to Know You, This Dusty Old Dust Is Getting Me Down, I've Got to Be Going, Traveling Home, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people will know that song. But that song was written as one of the big dust storms came, and they all thought they were going to die.
I bet.
Woody wrote So Long,
well, some of them
to know
did
you.
Die.
Right, exactly.
Some
which
of them
is,
did die.
Which is in his, you know, inimitable, humorous vein. Yeah. So he wrote a lot about Dust Bowl.
Wow, good stuff.
Yeah.
We have some. Let's see. Is there anything else we need to touch on here? Oh, your book, Hurry Up and Wait. What's going on with that?
Can I just say one more thing about Woody and HD?
Oh, yes, please do.
Okay. One of the things that we always kind of learn as caregivers, to folks who are living themselves with HD is how they hate surprises.
And how
they like predictability and routine in their lives.
Right.
So when Woody was in a hospital, he wrote this letter to his sister, Mary Jo. And he is on his ward. He was on Ward 40, or as he called it, Wardy 40. he would work with, now he's an inpatient in the psychiatric hospital, and the custodian's name was Pete, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So in the letter, he tells Mary Jo this. So let's, you can see him scheduling his routine in this little brief excerpt. So he's writing to Mary Jo, at 5:30 a.m., I wake up and slide my 30 chairs back out of Pete's way so he can sweep, and back again so he can mop. I help to serve my 30 breakfasts of his 30 ward mates at 7 or 7:15, and I help to medicate all of them at 8:30 a.m.
Gosh.
Read for 30 minutes my Bible out loud from 8:30 to 9. I make up all the beds with Pete helping me from 9:30 to 10. I help to feed them all dinner once more at 11 or 12 to 12:30. I help medicate them all again for 3:30 p.m., and I serve them all their suppers after I unmake their beds. So you can see him walk into that routine
and that
predictability, as he's telling Mary Jo.
Oh,
and in another similar one he wrote, I work around my ward from 5:30 every morning on up till 7:30 every night, helping dump ashtrays, move chairs back and forth, tables back and forth, and making up a bed for all of my 30 sticky men in here and helping to serve my 30. There's three goody cots every day, sweeping up the slick floors and read my Bible out loud for half an hour at 7:30. So anyway.
Routine. Yeah. Interesting.
Double portions, right?
Yeah.
People have an appetite. And just in a note he wrote in 1956, I do get all my double portions, and all my good meals here, which I think are better meals for free than I could ever buy anywhere on the outside. So don't you worry about my eats in here. I say they're a lot cleaner, better, and more and free for me because I'm ranked as a worker here on God's Good Grace Stony Hospital Ward, meaning helping out Pete.
That's great.
Anyway, I'm sorry, but that's...
I love it.
The routine
just,
thing
it's
is very
so pictorial,
interesting.
You know? It just...
Yes.
Just listening to you, just I can see it all happening. It's just incredible.
And then two notes just scribbled on this corner of the paper, on the head top page. One of them said in 1952, when he was at Brooklyn State, not Greystone, people are clay, people are glass, people are friends while the cigarettes last. And then another one that he wrote within a couple of months of that at Brooklyn State, it's called Visitor's Day.
Oh, yeah.
Visitor's Day, Visiting Day, voices hum on Visitor's Day, Visitor's Day, Visiting Day, cigarettes come on Visitor's Day.
Anyway. I love it. Great stuff. Wow. Okay, let's talk about your book now.
Hurry Up and Wait.
Yeah.
Hurry Up and Wait is, for those who don't know, I often speak about the cognitive features of Huntington's disease and what it might feel like if you actually have HD.
Mm-hmm.
To have these cognitive impairments, deficits, going on in your head moment to moment while you interact with everybody. And so, in a sense, try and climb inside somebody's head and see it as they see it. See us and what we're asking them to do and how we interact with them from their point of view. Also, you can think of it as in the days, you know, this whole handicap awareness thing of where, you know, in nursing school or high school even, you'll go around in a wheelchair for a day to see what it's like to do that. Or you wear a blindfold to simulate blindness, to understand that kind of stuff. So this is kind of related to that, to see what it might be like to actually think with these challenges of Huntington's disease. So if you see this talk, excuse me, we do them, and we try to do them in a fun way, of people doing a bunch of exercises, not physical exercises, writing exercises, or visual exercises, to see what it's like. Because thinking with HD, and people with HD verified this many times, it's not unlike thinking without HD, only it's more difficult. So we can create some of the things that feel mentally uncomfortable in ourselves. So an example is, and I don't want to give away all my secrets in case you get to see this someday, if somebody handed you a sheet with five long division problems. So one of the problems was 285,623 divided by 50,079 and gave you a sheet of those. You would recoil from that. Because we're not fluent at that anymore, and besides God invents calculators.
Right.
But we can see those kind of things in us, only they're worse when you have the features of thinking with NATs from MAT. So the book is really a transcription of that kind of exercises so that you can do them at home. You can steal them and teach them to your kids, to teach their kids. They can take things out of the book and make projects at school out of them, as a lot of kids do. And you can hopefully do them yourselves and see how it feels. And I use the word feel, like viscerally feels, to have to think moment to moment with this stuff. So that's why I did it. It's self-published. And that's what I talk about. If you see me speak, probably for the last 5 years, because I kind of just decided that the cognitive features are just so challenging, we got to get the message out of how difficult it is for these folks. Even though facially, as we're looking into their eyes, we may not be able to see that difficulty.
Well, and there's fear involved in it, too.
Oh, huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
Huge. We don't talk about that, and that's something that we need to talk about.
Absolutely. Fear, you're right. I probably should use that word to describe it much more often. You're right. But anyway, so it's now up to being, so I obviously wrote in English. 8 other languages have translated it, and they just finished the Norwegian translation and the Huntington Society of Quebec, as well as the French-speaking group in Belgium are doing a French translation. So,
very nice.
Just helping out a little on that. They pretty much do it on their own.
Very good. And where can we get the book?
You can order the book online at Lulu, which is a print-on-demand service.
Mm-hmm.
And it's lulu.com. And if search...
Is this in electronic format as well? Or?
Yes, it is.
Oh, wonderful. Okay.
I know Lulu's has been having some licensing problems with their electronic stuff, but it was as recently as a month ago.
Okay, good to know.
Again, that's a little over my head, but...
Well, you're using a radio show that's online, so that's not too bad.
Yeah, not too bad.
Let's see, anything else?
And by the way, with CHDI support now,
yes.
If anybody wants me to do that at a support group, everything doesn't have to be conferences.
Okay.
I'm more than willing to get in touch with me and... we like to think of that as a grassroots campaign. So,
okay. So now, if you had to come out to California, would you need to do more than one stint, or?
Well, it would make sense. Yes.
One support group. I mean.
Well, we would try. I mean, I don't want to say no, because it depends on the nature and what we can do other places and on the way and that kind of stuff.
Right. Well, I mean, road trip. California is
a big
state.
I'm learning, man. I'm embarrassed lately talking to Californians about how little I know.
We're so spread out, you know, here. We have the Northern California area, which is really well, you know, taken care of, and Southern California, which is really well taken care of. Central California is just me. That's all there is here. So, you know, we need help desperately over here on the Central Coast. I have new people calling me every week, every month for support and help. So, you know, I know that it's underserved here pretty bad.
And just to bring the Woody thing full circle, Woody spent a lot of time in California.
Did he?
He has a song, Do Re Mi, about going out to get work. When the Dust Bowl was as dry as ever. And it's the whole John Steinbeck, O'Keefe going out in Grapes of Wrath kind of story. He met, I think, Annie von Kirk, the woman who he threw the stool at and then wrote that touching apology to, at Will Gear's house. Grandpa Walton, he was a compadre of Woody's, and they actually met at Will Gear's house. And Woody had a radio show in the 40s at a small radio station in L.A.
Ah, be darned. Are those recorded?
No.
Oh, my goodness. Too bad.
It is too bad.
Anything from that time in the archives? Anything
in that era, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes. Mm. Search, you know, Amazon or just generally Google it, you'll find a recording that was recently unearthed and has been published, made available to the general public by Woody. I think it was at a Young Hebrew Association hall in Jersey somewhere. And it's him on the stage with Marjorie singing and telling stories. And him going off on tangents and Marjorie trying to reel him back in. It's called Livewire.
Livewire, okay.
So if you go Google Woody Guthrie Livewire, that's what would pop up.
Okay. That might be interesting to...
And by the way, Woody's, just last week, a novel that was found that Woody had written was just published for the first time ever.
What was it?
It's called House of Earth. Which is a new Woody novel that had been, lost, as they say, for a long time.
Uh-huh.
And through the efforts of a historian who's well-known in media, he's a talking head often on many news networks, Douglas Brinkley. He's also a presidential historian. And Johnny Depp. The two of them collaborated to get this book out. And it was just published last week. It's called House of Earth. They ordered mine. I haven't read it yet, though. Yeah.
Okay, I will check into that. That's interesting. Good to know. Alrighty. Well, listen, Jimmy, we're gonna wrap things up here. I've got some announcements. Can you stick with us?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Got a few announcements. Next week, speaking of folk singers, we have a very special guest next week, Danny Cahill. He won the Biggest Loser, I think, in season 9. I'm not sure. I haven't gotten all of his information yet. He lost 239 pounds in 7 months, I believe it was. He's written books. He's a very inspirational speaker. And he's written a song called Losing Big. So he'll be on the show next week, which is going to be really fun. I can't wait to interview him. I'm hoping that his wife Darcy can come on with him too. Their latest book is called Losing Big, Danny and Darcy Cahill. The song is called Second Chance. Sorry about that. The song is called Second Chance. And then he's written another book called Lose Your Quit. And the correlation that I see is, his past with compulsive behaviors, obsessive compulsive behaviors and addictions and that kind of thing, so correlates with what we're dealing with in Huntington's. And so it's going to be an interesting show next week with Danny Cahill. And I wanted to just kind of cover a couple of other things real quick. The Huntington's Disease Film Project, we have a face.org. We're going to be talking about many issues in this film, JHD and HD differences, symptoms, testing, medical records, discrimination, suicide, sexual behaviors, stress management, imprisonment, homelessness, alcoholism, drug addictions, end-of-life issues, choking, end-of-life stuff, having children, finding the cure, research, studies, and trials. What happens with the survivor? Survival guilt syndrome, abandonment, necessary adaptive equipment, financial issues, and much more. So, the basis of the film, we're trying to cover everything that we can through the radio program and just see how many other subjects are out there that we can include in the film. But it's going to be a rich film. I'm excited about getting that funded, hopefully this year. A couple more things going on real quick. Saturday, February 11, is the registration for it's called the UCSF Memory and Aging Center is having an HDSA Center of Excellence at UC Davis Medical Center 10th Annual Huntington's Disease Research Symposium. This is going to be really good stuff for us Californians and those who are close by that can get to this conference. Last year, well, I think it was February 11th, too. Let's see. The presenters. Julia Kay, PhD. She's part of Steve Finkbeiner's group, UCSF Gladstone Institute. Lisa LRB, PhD, Buck Institute for Age Research. Vicki Wheelock, MD, Director of Huntington's Disease Clinic, UC Davis. Jody Corey Bloom, MD, PhD, UC San Diego. Michael Geschwind, MD, PhD. Catherine Poston, PhD. Erica Pitch, DPT, PT. And Sharon Shaw, MD, Memory and Aging Center, UC San Francisco. Hopefully, and last year they recorded it. This year I believe they're going to be recording it as well, so we can put it out on Facebook and through the social medias. One more thing. Oh, registration for a charity golf tournament in Jacksonville, Florida. Go to deshelmer.org, registration charity golf tournament, and this will be on June 1st, 2013. And Greens Quality Construction has sponsored this awesome charity golf tournament. It's the first annual charity golf tournament for DeShalmar, and we have a face. So those are the announcements. James, do we have anything else that we needed to...
The date is actually June 15th.
I'm sorry. Did I say June
1st? It's okay. A lot of dates can be out now.
Yeah, pre-registration ends June 1st.
Right.
The
right.
date
so
of
June 15th in sunny Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay. And it's from 1 to 6 p.m., and it's at the Orange Park Golf and Country Club in Orange Park, Florida.
Correct.
So sorry about that. Didn't mean to mess up the date on you. And again, I need to re-announce the 10th Annual Huntington's Disease Research Symposium. I gave you a wrong date. This year, it's Saturday, March 9th, 2013. Last year, it was on February 11th. So this year, it's March 9th, 2013 at UCSF San Francisco, Genentech Hall, Mission Bay Campus, 600 16th Street, San Francisco. And it is hosted by the University of California, San Francisco Memory and Aging Center. Contact Gigi Satris at the research. She's a research coordinator at Memory and Aging Center. Phone number there is 415-476-2909. And they are also on Facebook, so you can check that out. I will be putting out announcements for all that. But I just want to thank Jimmy Pollard again for coming on and sharing his rich, rich wealth of Woody Guthrie stuff. It's great stuff. Jimmy, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing.
Thanks for having
us.
Me. Thank you to everybody who listened. Thank you to you and James for your contribution to the greater movement.
Thank you.
And to
thank
sign
you.
Off. And Woody would sign his letters with this. Take it easy, but take it. So
well,
tonight,
you know what? I also real quick want to thank the Woody Guthrie family and Mary Jo for, you know, and Nora for allowing us to share in all of his archive, you know, writings and everything. It's really
and the Woody Festival is woodyguthrie.com,
okay.
And the Woody Archives are woodyguthrie.org.
Thank you so much. Okay, everyone, have a great week, and we'll talk to you next Monday with Danny Cahill. So it's going to be a great show next Monday, too. Tune in. Talk to you next week. Have a great week.